number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg down, smack them, jack
them. Oh, next time is the right time. You know the it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
This is what we do. From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Glad you to be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Appreciate it as we continue through the night tonight. On the night, Bo Ryan announces retirement effective immediately. The winningest all-time coach for the Badgers. Basically inherited a program that had a little bit of success under Dick Bennett. I think they had gone to a couple of tournaments in before, but not many. There was a big drought for a long time where they didn't even make the NIT. He has clearly been able to take that Badger program. 14 years he was there, 14 NCAA tournaments. They went to the championship game last year where they almost won it all. They had upset Kentucky. I wouldn't even call it an upset. A lot of people thought that could happen and probably should have happened based on the way Wisconsin was playing going into that national semifinal game. But he announces his retirement, and it's rather quick. He had planned to retire at the end of the season. This gives him a chance to have his top assistant take over the program and guide it the way he wants. Enough games to get some sort of feel for it. Yes, Wisconsin's having kind of a disappointing year right now, but this gives the new coach a chance to sort of see whether he can take the program, do some things, and put a resume together so that when they're looking for a coach, he might be able to get it. So Bo Ryan announces his retirement effective immediately. He will be done. We talked earlier tonight about the Denver Broncos. They did announce that Brock Osweiler will be the starter for Denver, but Peyton Manning will be back at practice as the Broncos look to get back on track against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, looking at and we're going to have top five, bottom five coming up in just a little bit. But looking at where this is going to be an interesting playoff race in the AFC, because right now the two wild card teams, Kansas City and the Jets. But if the Jets went out, if the Chiefs went out, if the Steelers went out, Pittsburgh gets into the playoff spot and the Jets are out. So the Jets don't even control their own destiny, which is just an odd way with based on records and whatnot. But if the Jets went out, they're not guaranteed a spot. They have to have the Steelers lose. Now, the Steelers have games against Denver. They'll play Baltimore again, and they'll play Cleveland. At this rate, getting Denver at home for the Steelers is key because I think they can beat Denver. I really do. And I think that defense for the Broncos could be very problematic for the Steelers. But in the end, I think the Steelers score enough to beat the Broncos. Then you've got games where you can't sleep on, but you should be able to scoot by. A Baltimore Ravens team without Joe Flacco at quarterback and a Cleveland Browns team. While Johnny Manziel could score a lot of points with the public, spoiling the Steelers' chance of making it to the postseason if he's able to do that. I doubt it, but again, stranger things have happened in this league. 800-777-2907 if you want to get into the conversation. We got top five, bottom five coming up. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Blair Kirchhoff of the Kansas City Star. We're going to do a little bit of a review of 2015. And one of the big stories of 2015 was the Kansas City Royals winning the World Series. He has put together, along with the staff of the Kansas City Star, an audio book that sort of details the entire season of the Kansas City Royals run to a World Series championship, 30-year drought, ending that, and doing it in a way where the Royals came from behind a lot during the postseason. And they were that team, that resilient team that you could not kill. So we'll talk to him. I'll also get a little thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, one of those teams I was told you about that is in the wild card and have won 7 in a row after losing 5 straight. They sit at 8-5. So we'll get to talk to him about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. And also this hour, Greg Popovich. This was a story I had last week and I kind of put it off a little bit. Greg Popovich is still just a little cranky about the game of basketball. So we'll have that for you as well. But coming up next, our top five and bottom five. Teams that we like and teams we don't like. I don't normally give enough time for this segment, so I'm going to try to do that next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue. Top five, bottom five in the NFL. Before we get to that, you know how yesterday we were talking about how I'm going to take my kids to see Star Wars on Friday and I have to get there really super early and all that stuff? I am really psyched for this movie, but you know what I'm not happy with? Does every single thing that is needed that needs to be sold to me on television have a tie to this movie? Everything?
Yeah, I'm kind of sick of it.
I mean, seriously, you can't sell me a car without looking like stormtroopers and Darth Vader. Like everything, subs to fast food to stores, toys, of course, because that whole franchise is based around toys, cars, insurance, everything has got a Star Wars. It's crazy. No wonder J.J. Abrams is like going to disappear into a box, stressed out that this movie is going to be good, that people are going to genuinely like it. I'd be too. It feels like the whole weight of the entertainment universe is waiting on whether or not this movie is decent or not. I told myself, I said, listen, go to this movie, enjoy it. I'm not even going to talk about it with people for 2 weeks. All my friends, I'm not going to post anything on it. I'm not even going to tell them it's good or bad. I want people to, if they want to go in there and enjoy it the way it's supposed to be. But sweet Lord, I can't even buy a bag of chips without the Star Wars tie-in.
How disappointed will you be if it's bad or you think it's bad?
I think if I walk out of that theater going, man, that really wasn't that good.
Right.
I think I'll be really disappointed because, you know, here's the thing. When the prequels came out in 1999, you kind of watched them going, this isn't that good. But then you also held back, at least I did. I held back saying, you know, but he's got two more movies, right, to kind of put this all together. So maybe, you know, maybe this is a bad movie that's going to lead to a larger greatness of three films. Well, that didn't occur. I won't do that with this one. If this one stinks, I'm going to be like, okay, that's enough. Obvious. There are people who say that the original, if you were to watch the original, you might find the movie to be terrible.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing with sports. We do this in sports too. Nostalgia always feels a lot better than it actually was. Nostalgia, you know how people talk about the good old days? There's really no such thing as the good old days. Because we always remember the good parts about it. But there was corruption back in the old days. There was infidelity back in the old days. People were still trying to screw each other over back in the old days. They're just doing it a different way. And maybe on a larger scale. Because of the way we're all connected through, you know, internet and whatnot. But the same basic human emotions were prevalent in every part of human history. But we tend to sort of weed that stuff out and think about the good times. Star Wars was, like, for kids, we watched it, we were amazed, we loved it, we want more of it, Empire Strikes Back came, it was dark, we didn't quite understand, it came with that twist, we were really like, wow, oh my god, what happens now, what's going to happen, whoa, I have to wait 3 years, then the Return of the Jedi came back, you're a little older, but you're still trapped in that world, you still want to see how it ends, still want to see where the story goes, so it becomes part of your childhood, but it became a part of a lot of people's good childhood. So they remember it as being the greatest thing they've ever seen, the greatest part of their childhood. Now we're getting these movies and we're all older, you know, like,
no,
you know, I'm not a kid anymore. I mean, you can't sell me toys. I need to be entertained. So I'm hoping I'd be entertained.
Right. Well, now, you know, I obviously don't know anything about Star Wars or anything, but is this going to be the only movie? Is this the last movie? Is there three
Three more. There's two more coming after this. They're going to do another trilogy.
Oh, so there's a full three. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But J.J. Abrams is not going to be involved.
That means there's going to be nine total.
Right. Nine.
Yeah, I definitely never watched Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's like my son's watching it and he's watching the first one and it is dated a little bit. It's from the 70s. It's still cool. They used models. They didn't use CGI, but my son's not used to non-CGI, right? He's used to things being a lot more like when he watched the first one, he's like, well, that looks like a movie I'm familiar with. I had to explain to him, these are all models, man. They made a model of that Death Star and blew it up. This isn't just a computer. So, all right, top five, bottom five of the National Football League. Let's start with the bottom. No. We started with the bottom last time.
Yeah, we did bottom last
time. Let's go with the top.
Okay.
Number five on your list.
This is where I put the Cincinnati Bengals.
Cincinnati Bengals.
Because of the injury solely.
I took the Cincinnati Bengals off the list.
Did you take them off? Okay.
And I put Green Bay here. This is, I'm kind of giving Green Bay a little bit of a reward. I don't know why, but this is where I put Green Bay. I wanted so badly to put the Steelers, but I was afraid that was too biased. I was trying to mix it up a little bit. So I put Green Bay, and Green Bay is the fifth team. I know they're struggling, but, and after they beat the Cowboys, that's a team they should have rolled past. That's where I put them. Cincinnati, I just don't know. I don't know what they're going to be without Andy Dalton. I just don't know.
I'm basing it off the fact that I think he will. Actually, Stephen from Ohio called and said, basically, the way they're looking at it, if he doesn't play against the Broncos in 2 weeks, they'll probably just hold him out, and he should be good to go for the playoffs.
Then they easily would jump back into my top five. Easily.
He's week to week. He didn't have to have surgery. So they're basically saying, if he's not back in a few weeks, they'll probably just sit him the last game anyways and just have him completely fresh, give him, you know, a month to fully heal that thumb, especially because it's his throwing hand, and come back for the playoffs ready to go.
This is where I should have put Pittsburgh there, because you know what? The Steelers had a good game against Seattle. They didn't win, but they still had a good game against Seattle.
My other two teams that I were considering putting ahead of the Bengals was the Seahawks and the Steelers.
Yep, Seahawks. I probably should have put the Seahawks there. I should have probably, you know, I didn't even think
I like those two teams over the Packers.
Look at that. Look at that. I'm going to change it now. I'm going to put Seattle. Seattle's my top five team. Number four.
I have the Denver Broncos.
That's where I have the Denver Broncos. Still not sure about the offense, but Brock Osweiler is still quarterback. They're not making a major change there. They're still the same team. They've got some injuries. Everybody else does, but it's not like a major overhaul. Correct. So I'm going to stick with the Denver. That was a bad game, yes, but they're still the top team in that division, one of the top teams in the AFC. So I'll keep them there at number four. Number three.
The Arizona Cardinals.
That's where I have the Arizona Cardinals.
Last Thursday night against the Vikings team. That's underrated. They've been struggling a little bit, but they played a pretty good game, and I really like the Cardinals.
That was an enjoyable game, and that said a lot about the Cardinals. I mean, again, I think the Cardinals are, they got a good punch from Minnesota. Minnesota gave it a good shot. That was a good, not necessarily a needed win for the Vikings in terms of impression, but they gave a good one because the Vikings needed to show that they can play with a team like that, and I think they did. But Arizona showed everything that they are in that game. Number two.
The New England Patriots.
New England Patriots. That's where I've got the Patriots as well. They're back with Rob Gronkowski, but the number one team is the Carolina Panthers.
Correct.
All right, so I'm changing my Green Bay to Seattle, by the way. So there you go. All right, because I really wanted to make a little movement there with Cincinnati.
Right.
I'll knock them out.
I got you.
Let's go with bottom five. We'll start with team number 28 on your list.
I have the Atlanta Falcons. I had them there last week, and I'm keeping them there because they lost again. They're just a bad football team, and they're going to stay in my bottom five until they either win a game or they're just bad.
I put the Baltimore Ravens. Without Joe Flacco, I just don't like where the Ravens are heading.
Ravens off my list from last week just because they're so injured and we just know they're bad. I'm wanting to get some other teams on there.
Yeah, because 29, that's where I put the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay.
You shameful football team. If I could put you last, I would put you last. There is no excuse for this. I'm going on a rant now. There is no excuse for this. This is not like you lost Julio Jones or Matt Ryan. It is not like any of that stuff. You're not dealing with a major, major, major injury. Your offense is averaging 14 points per game during this losing skid. You are ashamed. You should be ashamed how this season is going. Started 5-0. You've lost six in a row. Didn't even show up against the Carolina Panthers. At least make a push. At least show you have life. At least show you have a pulse. My God. You go on the road and everybody says the same garbage going into those games. This is the stand. We got to make a stand. We got to change it up. Then you go there and you don't even play. I mean, come on. Like I said, I was said since the second this week started, it is very, very, very hard to be shut out in the National Football League. Very hard. Most even terrible teams who are having terrible days will find a way to kick a field goal, at least, so that they can avoid the zero. But that's exactly what they put. So I put the Atlanta Falcons there. Good. Rant's over.
I put the at number 29 for me is the 49ers. I probably should have them lower, but I dislike other teams more. They lost to a terrible Cleveland Browns team, and it wasn't close.
Yeah, that's right. And I should have punished the San Francisco 49ers, too. But I did not. Number 30 on your list.
I have the San Diego Chargers. They actually played a decent game, competed with the Kansas City Chiefs, held them to 10 points. Yep. But they only scored 3, and offense is supposed to be what they do.
I put the Cleveland Browns here. Johnny Manziel is giving them life, and they did have a nice win, but I'm still punishing the franchise for the season of what happened all year. I like where Cleveland is going. In fact, they do make me nervous as a Steelers fan, just having that upset sort of mindset going into the final game of the year. But one game is not a whole body of work, and I still hate their body of work, so that's where I put the Cleveland Browns.
I have the Cleveland Browns 31.
31 is where you put the Cleveland Browns. Spot,
and it's all about what you said. They've screwed around with this team so much during the season that they deserve to be in the bottom two probably the rest of the year, no matter what they do. Even if Manziel comes out and plays great the last few weeks, that gives them more reason that they should be in the bottom because he should have been playing all along. And we don't know if he plays great these last few weeks. It's still not a guarantee that he's the quarterback next year.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And if he beats the Steelers, though, they're going to put a statue in front of that stadium. 31 on my list is the Dallas Cowboys. And I can tell with Jerry Jones, the season can't end fast enough.
Yes.
It has just not worked out. And it isn't even just a Romo thing. It's like they never really established a strong runner. They kind of bounced around with that a little bit. Defense has played good at times, not. They've had injuries. The offensive line, I thought, would be more impactful than it was. It just seems like it's been a year where everything has been a mess, just a mess. And the Romo situation is 1, 2, and 3 in terms of reasons why they're bad. But 4, 5, and 6, there are some other reasons why they're bad. So I put Dallas as my 31 team. And 32, I think we have it the same, right?
Tennessee.
The Tennessee Titans. Yikes.
I wanted to put the Colts on my list after losing like they did to the Jaguars, but I had a problem putting a division leader.
Me too. I really did. A win over the Houston Texans, and all of a sudden they're leading the division and heading to the playoffs. All right, Blair Kirchhoff joins us next on the Kansas City Star as we reminisce about the Royals and stories that made 2015 great. Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. And I know this time of year is kind of fun because we get to recap a lot of the stuff that went on in 2015. We had the Sports Person of the Year. We go through our biggest stories of 2015. It's kind of reasons I like this time of the season. Blair Kirchhoff joins us from the Kansas City Star. He has narrated part of an audiobook about the run of the Kansas City Royals and their win of the World Series, a drought that ends after 30 years. Back in 1985, they won, and then, of course, this year beating the New York Mets. Blair, how are you? Thanks for joining us today.
I am great, and thanks for having me on to talk about Crowned, the story of the Kansas City Royals.
All right, so let's talk about the process of putting this together. First of all, it's an audiobook that people can download and sort of not only listen to you narrate the story, but also interviews and clips and all of that kind of stuff.
That's right. The Star put together it's funny how this works. After last season, when the Royals lost Game 7 of the World Series to the San Francisco Giants, the Star put together a book, sort of a collection of the stories that were written about the Royals, and the book did fine. It was a great run for the Royals to get to a World Series after it had been at that point 29 years. But and Kansas City felt great. I mean, it was really a big moment in Kansas City sports history. And then in 2015, they go one step further and win the World Series. And the difference between losing Game 7 and winning a World Series was just unbelievable. The reaction of this town for having a World Championship team was just amazing. And it was so the Star put together another book, and this one's called Crowned, the story of the, you know, the basic story of the 2015 Kansas City Royals. And we did the same thing. We collected all the stories about each of the postseason games, plus a review of the regular season. And I went into a studio and read these stories. We broke them all into chapters, and we had a great time reviewing this, the games and, the incredible way in which the Royals won this thing. You know, every year somebody wins the World Series, but the way the Royals won this one, I'm not sure we've ever seen anything like it in baseball history.
When you talk stories, is there a human element to this rather than in the eighth inning they got two hits and then they won this game and then the next night Johnny Cueto struck out these many people? Is there a human element to the process of winning the World Series?
Yeah, there absolutely is. I mean, in the clubhouse, you know, in the 25-man clubhouse, you've got 25 different stories, and you can even extend beyond that with the coaches, the manager Ned Yost, and even the owner and general manager. Everybody has a backstory, and we explore all of that in the book as well. And it's not just me reading it or narrating it. We do it in some of these cases. The own words of a Lorenzo Cain, an Eric Hosmer, a Mike Moustakas, a Dayton Moore, the GM. So they're all represented in this book in their own voice. So you don't get just me. You get the actual voices of Royals in their post game situations in their own words. And then it's even more than that. There are the last chapter really is my favorite. It's the sights, the sounds of the parade, the celebration in Kansas City. It really is kind of it's goosebumps sort of stuff at the end.
In terms of theme, I mean, when you talk about teams, and they always try to take a story of a team winning a championship and try to put a theme behind it, whether it is underdog or redemption or those kind of themes. What would be the theme of the 2015 Kansas City Royals?
Well, you're right. That does happen, and of course you have to. you got to sort of let the whole thing play out before a theme can be assigned. And this one is most appropriately a comeback theme. Like I said sort of at the beginning, nobody has won a baseball championship the way the Royals won this one, in that they won 11 postseason games in the ALDS, the ALCS, the World Series, and in eight of them they trailed and had to come back. And in three of the four World Series, they trailed in all four World Series games, and in three of those they trailed in the seventh inning or later, and there was never a thought in the minds of the players in that dugout or the front office folks that they would lose a game. Now they did lose a few, of course. They faced elimination in the first round against the Astros, but they never ever thought they were out of the game, and they did it. These comebacks occurred in such dramatic fashion, like the Alex Gordon home run in Game 1 of the World Series to send it into extra innings. The final two games in New York in the Games 4 and 5 in the World Series, in which the Royals were down by multiple runs late in the game and had to overcome that to win it. So this was a comeback team like no other in baseball, postseason baseball history.
Blair Kirchhoff joins us from the Kansas City Star, narrates Crowned, the story of the Kansas City Royals to the 2015 World Series title. Blair, in terms of baseball economics, because there was a time when baseball was going through the labor strife, and there was this belief that small market teams will never win in this sport. And the Kansas City Royals, along with like teams like the Pittsburgh Pirates, became kind of the team people would mention to say, and then you've got the Kansas City Royals, and all they're going to do is just grow players for the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. How has the baseball economics changed? So now that we see Pittsburgh in the World Series or in the playoffs, we see Kansas City in back-to-back World Series. How did the economic landscape of baseball change so that Kansas City becomes a competitive baseball team?
Well, you're absolutely right. And that was part of the sort of a woe-is-me attitude that a lot of Royals fans had in the 90s and in the 2000s when the constant losing and always looking for a scapegoat. And one of those was, you know, can't afford it. We cannot afford good baseball. Free agents don't want to come here. The Royals won't pay free agents. The Royals, you know, will develop stars like Johnny Damon or Jermaine Dye. I'm sorry, that Dye's not a good example, but a Carlos Beltran, and then not be able to afford them. They'll get to the, you know, their contract year, and the Royals will have to trade them away for pieces basically, and not get and just not be able to re-sign those guys. Couldn't afford it. So I think what happened, the economics of baseball didn't change. You know, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Yankees all continue to wildly outspend teams in markets such as Kansas City. But I think what Kansas City did was follow the example of some of the, you know, smaller market franchises, the Cardinals being one, the Minnesota Twins the previous decade being another. They identified franchises that just played the game in a very smart way in drafting and developing, and then being very smart about their free agent acquisitions. They're not spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for free agents, but getting second tier guys and piecing together a roster that way. So the Royals ended up with a team that most of the guys on the team that they developed or acquired through a very shrewd trade. You know, Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar, Wade Davis, all came to the Royals through, you know, smart trades. And then they keep, and then to sort of complete the picture, they go out and get a Kendrys Morales, as a DH this year, as a second tier free agent guy, not somebody they were going to have to pay $20 million a year for, but somewhere in the $10 to $12 million a year range. And then to put it over the top this year, they did go out at the trade deadline and acquire the likes of a Johnny Cueto and a Ben Zobrist, pieces that they felt they needed to complete the team. And turns out both of those guys had very, very big postseasons for them. So they just made a lot of the right moves. And I think they proved, just like some other franchises have done in the past, Texas Rangers are another example, that if you make the right moves, you don't have to play the big spending games, and you can play a little money ball, but it's not just money ball like the Oakland A's perfected a decade or so ago. There's some other moves that have to be made, and the Royals, and you mentioned the Pirates in the playoffs now for three straight years. They've done it as well as any small market to medium market team in baseball.
You brought up the fact that this team came from behind a lot in the postseason, especially. That takes a certain kind of attitude, and I don't know if that's ingrained or if it's taught. If you were to put that into some sort of context, into how the Royals were very confident no matter where they were, especially in that Houston series where it looks like the Astros were going to move on, where did that resiliency come from?
That's a great question, and I think the simple answer is it boils down to one game. And that game didn't actually happen this year. It happened a year ago in the American League wild card game. The Royals get into the playoffs in the second or third to last day of the season, so they finally break their postseason drought. They get into the playoffs and they get to play host to the Oakland Athletics. And the Royals fall behind 7-3 in the eighth inning. John Lester's on the mound for the Athletics. Lester had owned the Royals throughout his career. He no-hit him when he was with the Red Sox. And, you know, it was just an impossible situation for the Royals in that moment. I mean, the analytics all called for less than a 3% chance at that point in the game that the Royals would end up winning it. And yet they did. They scored three in the eighth, one in the ninth, and then came back and scored on Salvador Perez's base hit in the 12th. To win the wild card game in a game in which they would have virtually no chance of winning, And that game really did become a major pivot point for this organization. And they went on to win 7 more postseason games to get into the 2014 World Series. But whenever this team had a great comeback victory, everybody talked about, well, we've done it before. It's happened. We saw it happen. And they were referring to that 2014 game. So when they got down by 4 to the Houston Astros in game 4 down at Minute Maid Park in the 8th inning, it did look bleak. And then base hit. And all of a sudden, as soon as they got a little crack of sunlight, that rally started, they just the confidence in that dugout just swelled, and they didn't stop until they took the lead and then went on to win the series.
Blair Kirchhoff again, Kansas City Star, crowned the story of the Kansas City Royals. Blair, how can people get this?
They can get it by going to a couple of websites. One is KansasCity.com, and that's the one that I am most familiar with. That's the Star's website. So go to KansasCity.com, and there are all kinds of products from the Star-produced products from the World Series. But this one is a $13 purchase, and in about 3 hours, two and a half to 3 hours, of listening and reliving and just capturing the excitement, the mood of this World Series run.
Blair, while we have you, I wanted to ask you a quick question about the Kansas City Chiefs, because they have become one of the dangerous teams now going in as we head down to the final few games of the season. What turned things around for them, losing 5 straight? I know it was a very, very tough schedule during that run, but now have ripped off 7 in a row. What clicked for them?
A couple of things. You're right. It was just a miserable start for this team, a team that came into this season really openly positive about their chances. I mean, this is Andy Reid and John Dorsey, the GM, didn't hold back in training camp. They went out and basically declared themselves a playoff team, and for good reason. I mean, a lot of third year for Andy Reid in Kansas City, third year for Alex Smith as a starting quarterback. Justin Houston was signed, sealed, and delivered this summer. They had the pieces in place. Guys like Derek Johnson, the linebacker, Eric Berry, the free safety, both coming back after missing most of last season. They just felt so good about their chances. They get out of the gate. The schedule's not favorable for them. They win the opener against the Texans in Houston, and then the 5-game losing streak starts. It started with a loss at home on a Thursday night to the Broncos, a game the rival AFC West division rival. Chiefs were better than the Broncos most of the night, but Jamaal Charles loses a fumble with 30 seconds to go. Broncos take it in for the win, and that loss lingered. It really did. The schedule was tough. They had they played at Cincinnati, they played at Green Bay, they played at Minnesota. The schedule was tough, and the Chiefs did not respond. And then just like that, they get the Steelers at home, the Steelers without Ben Roethlisberger. Landry Jones is quarterbacking that afternoon. And the Chiefs finally had enough. Big defensive game for Kansas City, and that started the turnaround. And the schedule absolutely got softer. They hadn't played many of the division rivals yet, and so Oakland and San Diego were still left on the schedule. They did go to Denver, but then that was the game, Peyton Manning's worst game as a pro. Had the foot injury, and the Chiefs ended up winning at Denver, which is just something that never happens. But they got that done. So now they're sitting at 7 wins in a row. They are the number 5 team the season ended today in the AFC playoff picture, going to Baltimore on Sunday.
Blair, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Good luck with the audiobook. I love this kind of review of the 2015 season. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you very much.
Great stuff. Blair Kirchhoff, again, Kansas City Star. Again, Crowned is the audiobook on the Kansas City Royals. A little touch on the Kansas City Chiefs, who won 7 in a row. And we thought they were dead, too. I mean, they didn't look good at all. Then they lost to Jamaal Charles. You're like, oh, man, that division is going to be weak. And here the Chiefs are again, winning 7 straight. And right now, the 5th seed in the AFC. 800-777-2907 as we continue through the night. It is Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Why, it's old man Wilkerson. Hey, we'd have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you kids. Greg Popovich is in the news again. This time, he does not like the three-point line. Told Jeff McDonald at Spurs Nation, "I'm old school. I wish there weren't any threes. It would be more basketball-like to me." All right, I understand where he's coming from. A lot of old-time basketball guys don't like the three-pointer because the way the three-pointer came into the league. For those who don't know, the NBA didn't always have a three-point line. In fact, it was always 2 points no matter where you shot it from. But the three-point line was created in the ABA, and they married that idea into the NBA. And for the most part, it's exciting and it works. It took a while for it to integrate into the college and high school games. But once it did, now it's pretty much standard, and that's what we've been living with. And there's an entire generation that has grown up knowing nothing else but the three-point line. But every time I hear Popovich say this kind of stuff, it makes me want to go, dude, can you just be happy? Like, do you have to be old man Wilkerson every single time? How about once go, yeah, you know what? I like it. It's kind of cool. But there are people who believe that this is an ulterior motive, that Popovich is actually playing mind games. And if he is, then forget the old man Wilkerson stuff. Then the man is simply brilliant. All the attention in the NBA right now is going on the Golden State Warriors. And rightfully so, they ran off 24 wins of the defending champs. Steph Curry's the hottest player in the league. Here's Greg Popovich striking at one thing that makes Curry and the Warriors so dangerous. Is their ability to hit the three-point shot. Now, don't get me wrong. San Antonio, or better yet, don't get him wrong, the Spurs will use that three-point shot too. Just because he hates it doesn't mean he ain't going to use it. So there are some that believe that this is just a subtle hint or a push at the Golden State Warriors, who did not have to play San Antonio en route to the NBA title last year. And the Spurs have got themselves a whale of a defense. But with Greg Popovich, and I think he's a brilliant coach, but it's just like with those interviews that he has to do where he's got all these short answers and he can you just smile? Can you just be happy? Your life is great. You win titles. People genuinely respect you. I mean, do you have to be sourpuss every single time on every issue? For the love of Pete. I mean, the one thing that he's is excited about is the success of Becky Hammond, who he brought onto his staff, who she led the Spurs to a summer league title. He's very, very vocal about that. He will be more than happy to tell you how great she is and how she is totally deserving. There's a great article in Sports Illustrated about her, and you really should read it. In it, he's very, very complimentary. Thinks that she could have a spot on the USA Olympic men's team going down to Rio as a coach. But outside of that, what else is Greg Popovich happy about? He's not even happy when they win a title, for crying out loud. He doesn't at least appear that way. Listen, I don't mind movement in a progressive way in sports. I don't mind changes. We have to adjust. We have to adapt. We have to make the game a little bit more exciting. Look, there was a time where basketball wasn't played with a shot clock, for crying out loud. If you all remember back in the old college game when it was the four corners back in the day, back in the early 80s, man, it was bad basketball, but it was strategic basketball. It's the way it could be. It's the way it had to be. So, a lot of times you have to adapt. You have to sort of change some stuff up. You have to move it around. Look at what the NFL did with the extra point. I didn't like it. I was like Greg Popovich. I thought it was ridiculous to change the distance of the extra point. Give me a play I actually have to sweat out now. Another play I have to sweat out. But let's be honest. I love it. I actually like it now. There's more missed extra points. More teams are going for two. We're actually getting what the league wanted out of it, for crying out loud. So that actually worked out. Popovich, I mean, what's he going to say next? Like, I don't remember the time when there was no free throw line. Popovich, I love you. I really love you. I love what the Spurs do. But this act is getting old. Behind the scenes, he probably dresses as a clown, wears a big old red nose, walks around in big old shoes, and goes honk, honk, honk everywhere he goes. But on the sidelines, he looks like a big old shower push. Yahoo Sports Radio.